Green space in cities gives people places to grow food, to exercise. It's good for mental health. And studies have shown that green space can help urban areas stay cooler during heat waves. But a new study shows that across the United States, many neighborhoods lack green space today because of a specific government policy enacted over 80 years ago. Rachel Morello-Frosch is a professor in the Department of Environmental Science, Policy and Management and the School of Public Health at the University of California, Berkeley. She's co-author of the study recently published in the journal Environmental Health Perspectives. The study is called Red Lines in Green Space, the relationship between historical redlining and 2010 green space across the United States. Can you explain the practice of redlining and how it impacted communities?
Redlining is a term that came from a federal policy in the 1930s under Roosevelt's New Deal, where an agency called the Homeowner Loan Corporation was charged with helping communities, particularly in cities, prevent failing mortgages because we were undergoing the Great Depression and it was a recovery program. And so the government was charged with grading neighborhoods in communities across the country based on their financial risk and whether or not they would be given mortgage insurance policies to prevent mortgage bailouts, essentially. There were four grades: green, blue, yellow, and red. And several of the criteria were based on the racial and ethnic makeup of neighborhoods. And so the higher proportion residents of color, the worse the grade was for the neighborhood, the more it was considered hazardous or high risk. It was given a red colored grade, ergo the term redlining. So this basically dictated the extent to which those communities would have access to capital to enhance and preserve rates of home ownership in the 1930s.
And that's had repercussions all the way up to today.
Absolutely. So there's been some good work to show that a racist policy that was enacted over 80 years ago still exerts its effects on the socioeconomic and physical environment profiles of these neighborhoods. So many of these redline neighborhoods are still disproportionately low to moderate income and very high proportions residents of color. And now that more of us are starting to do studies on these neighborhoods, we're seeing its effects on the physical environment as well as in the health status of the communities that were historically redlined. We still see those effects today.
So what did this study set out to look at?
This study specifically sought to look at to what extent do we see disparities in green space coverage based on the grades, the historical grades of these neighborhoods. So we looked at satellite imagery that allows us to look at green space coverage across the country. It's a very nice data set. And what we found essentially is that the most hazardous grade, i.e. the red line neighborhoods, had the least amount of green space coverage, even after accounting for a lot of other factors that might explain that relationship between worse Hulk grade and less green space. We call them Hulk grades, which stands for Homeowner Loan Corporation.
And what do you mean when you say green space?
Green space can be a lot of different things. We tend to think about green space as our local parks, but it can also include things like tree canopy in your neighborhood, you know, the extent to which you have greenery when you walk out on the street. It can include open space, so maybe less manicured parks, but any place that's green. And one of the issues with this data is it does give you a sense of access to parks and a desirable green space. It doesn't always distinguish between certain types of green space, you know, due to unmaintained parcels, for example, within a neighborhood. So that's a little bit of a shortcoming of the data. But it does give you a really good sense of to what extent is there green space in particular neighborhoods, and which generally include desirable green space.
Part of the data that you looked at was 1940 census data?
Yes. We wanted to be able to account for the fact that there are a lot of socioeconomic factors in the 1940s that could be also exerting its effects in terms of access to green space today. And we wanted to be able to account for that so that we could isolate the fact that this federal government policy is what's really driving the patterns that we're seeing in green space today.
How does this work build on other studies that have been done about redlining?
It's interesting because, you know, in the field of sociology, people have been looking at the effects of redlining on the social and current economic opportunities of communities today. But I think more recently, people in the field of environmental health science, in part because of the release of these digitized homeowner loan corporation risk grade maps, has enabled us to really think about structural drivers of environmental health disparities in the United States in new ways. So we have looked at the relationship between redlining and green space in this study. My collaborators and I also have looked at this in relationship to risk of asthma exacerbations and found very strong relationships. And we've also looked at this in relationship to the redlining and risk of poor birth outcomes in cities in California, where we were able to get digitized birth records and look at this.
And there are other environmental hazards and impacts that are associated with historically redlined areas.
Yes. So we know that redlined areas historically have had less investments in their physical infrastructure. Many redline neighborhoods historically were then zoned for lots of industrial development and the placement of hazardous facilities that pollute. Many of these redline neighborhoods had their communities cut up by major roadways and freeways, which have exposed these communities to traffic-related air pollution and other environmental hazards. Redlining continues to exert and disproportionately expose the communities that live in them today to different kinds of environmental hazards.
How do you hope your study could be used?
I think studies like this can really lift up opportunities for where we want to be directing investments and interventions to improve the physical and social environments in these redline neighborhoods and start the process of making spatial reparations, if you will, to improve and protect these vulnerable groups.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Rachel Morello-Frosch is a professor in the Department of Environmental Science, Policy and Management and the School of Public Health at the University of California, Berkeley. There's more at AlleghenyFront.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple.